With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Farm debt at ag banks continues to rise, and it's driven by tighter margins for crop producers and steady demand for financing. That's according to the Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City. Now, while loan delinquency rates remain low at just 1.3%, they did tick slightly higher as farm financial conditions weakened. Ag banks, defined as those with at least a quarter of lending tied to farm loans, reporting stronger growth than other lenders, with half seeing loan balances increase by more than 5% and a quarter posting gains over 10%. Real estate debt at farm-focused banks increasing 5% year over year, while production loans jumped nearly 10%. By contrast, non-ag banks showing flat to declining farm loan balances, record farm debt levels being offset by relatively strong earnings at ag banks, supported by higher interest margins, though liquidity has tightened as loan-to-deposit ratios creep upward. Fed notes conditions remain uneven across ag. Commodity brokerage firm StoneX adjusting its 2025 crop year outlook, trimming U.S. corn yield expectations while boosting soybean prospects. Firm now projecting average corn yields at 185.9 bushels per acre. It's down from 186.9 last month, but even so, with USDA's higher acreage base factored in, total corn production forecast 16.737 billion bushels. That's an increase from September's guess of 16.5. For soybeans, StoneX raising its yield forecast to 53.9 bushels per acre, up from 53.2. It also lifts estimated production to 4.326 billion bushels. Firm's updates reflect changing field conditions and revisions to USDA acreage data, which continues to influence balance sheets. Now, by comparison, USDA's August WASDE report projected a national corn yield of 188.8 bushels per acre and beans at 53.6, suggesting StoneX sees slightly tighter corn output but a more optimistic soybean harvest. U.S. rice farmers facing a challenging 2025 season marked by flooding, extreme heat, and drought across the Mississippi Delta, which offset a smoother growing year in California. University of Arkansas Assistant Professor Ryan Loy reports that overall U.S. rice production projected to fall by about 10 million from 2024. That would drop to 208.8 million pounds. Acreage remains between 2 and 3 million acres and consistent with long-term rotation cycles, though high input costs and weaker prices continue to weigh on grower decisions. U.S. ag exports provide more than trade value. They generate significant employment across farming, processing, marketing, and transportation. Economic Research Service values exports at $175.5 billion and supporting an estimated 1.05 million full-time civilian jobs nationwide. It's Agriculture Today.
At Wiley Implement and Spray Center, we are here to keep your Case IH tractors, planters, sprayers, and other implements in tip-top shape this season. Whether you need in-shop or in-field service, Wiley has the factory-trained technicians to keep your equipment running with genuine Case IH parts. Give us a call today or go to WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
This is Agriculture Today.
Let's take a look at what actually happened to imports once the tariffs went into effect.
Sean Arita is the Associate Director of the Ag Risk Policy Center at North Dakota State University, speaking at a recent fertilizer webinar.
This slide shows total U.S. fertilizer imports before and after the IEEPA tariffs. By product, potash is down about 3%, nitrogen about 6%. And phosphate's down the most, nearly 25%. Some of that phosphate decline is likely reflected by demand destruction for price issues outside of IEEPA for some of the reasons that Delphine had explained earlier. But we are likely seeing some degree of these IEEPA tariffs taking hold. It's also worth noting that while potash was ultimately granted a broad exemption, there was still a lot of uncertainty earlier this year. Importers weren't first sure whether these shipments would be covered, and there was a cloud of uncertainty likely contributed to this early dip in volumes. But the big picture is that the fertilizer imports have declined. But behind those numbers, the story is more complex. Some suppliers have fallen away, while exempt suppliers have picked up the slack. So this slide breaks down import changes separately across fertilizers hit by IEEPA tariffs and those that were exempt. The red bar show the IEEPA tariffed products, and the declines are steep. Potash imports drop by nearly 3/4. That's actually a very, very small group that was non-exempt, very small amount of tariff lines for potash. But nitrogen fell about 30%, and phosphates were down about 20%. But the exempt categories, again, they tell a very different story. These are the green bars. Those actually grew for phosphates. They rose about 20%. And potash held up better than the IEEPA affected groups. And then there's Russia. The blue bars show there are shipments which were exempt. These flows really stand out. Double-digit increases in both nitrogen and potash. In effect, U.S. buyers lean heavily on Russian supply to fill some of these gaps left by our other suppliers. That's helped fertilizer availability in the U.S., but it also creates vulnerability. Europe, for example, has recently imposed new sanctions on Russian fertilizers if geopolitical tensions escalate further, or if Russian exports get disrupted, the U.S. could find itself really exposed to Russia dependence. So the bottom line here is, though, that imports under the IEEPA tariffs have fallen, exempt flows rose, especially from Russia. This adaptation has helped in the short run, but it leaves us more dependent on a risky source of supply, and it has not completely filled the gap. So what has been the effect on prices? Are U.S. farmers paying more for their fertilizers? One way we can examine this is by looking at the price spreads of the U.S. with the rest of the world surrounding the imposition of the IEEPA tariffs. So here we use Brazil's CIF prices as a reference point. If tariffs were really biting in terms of prices, we'd expect U.S. price premiums over Brazil to widen after the tariff imposition. With urea, the U.S. premium over Brazil did rise a bit after the reciprocal tariffs, as we can see in that dotted line. But it also lines up with the seasonal bump we usually see around this time. So it's not easy to say how much of this tariffs is normal market patterns. On the top right is MAP. For a while, the spread stayed pretty flat. But more recently, we have seen some upward trend in that price spread. And the bottom right is potash. Again, here, potash was largely exempt, so you don't really see too much of a change, and we shouldn't expect too much to begin with. So the takeaway is mixed. We have seen some hints of rising pressure in urea and MAP, but it's not definitive. And since potash was exempt, it serves as a good check, at least as a reference point. For now, global supply and demand still look like the main drivers, and the real test will be what happens when we head into the spring planting, when U.S. demand really picks up.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
This land, there's no more perfect place on earth. It provides more than the crop you grow or the herd you tend. It gives you purpose. And to help young, beginning, and small farmers fulfill their purpose, Capital Farm Credit is here for you. Our decades of experience providing advice, products, and opportunities can help you build a life on the land you love most. To learn more, visit CapitalFarmCredit.com. Capital Farm Credit. Together, we're better.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
We are going through a period of oversupply here.
A dairy oversupply? Matt Donne is Director of Dairy Marketing Insight with StoneX.
Margins for dairy farmers last year were very good. And usually when margins get that good, we see milk production expand in response to that strong profitability. And we are seeing strong milk production this year. But a big driver behind that has been new cheese processing capacity. Between late 2024 into 2025, we've had a record amount of new cheese processing capacity come online in the U.S. And we're seeing farmers that are either expanding their existing farms to supply milk into these new cheese plants, or they're building new farms to supply milk into these cheese plants. So in the past 14 months, we've seen the U.S. dairy herd expand by about 200,000 cows, and roughly 130,000 of those cows have been added in states with new cheese capacity. So good margins last year are helping to drive the milk production growth that we're seeing, but also new cheese capacity is also driving the expansion in milk production. There's a lag between changes in the market prices and then when that flows through into the milk prices for the farmers and then when the dairy farmers actually get those checks. So they're just starting to see some of these declines in commodity prices showing up in their milk checks. So it hasn't had much of an impact on farm level economics yet. But if prices stay down at these levels, margins are going to get much tighter in 2026.
With that dairy oversupply, we also have overall weakening demand.
To throw a little bit of optimism in here, demand isn't terrible for everything. We've seen very good demand for high protein products like whey protein concentrates, whey protein isolates. The demand is still good there. Prices are still good there. Food makers are adding protein into everything from water and beer to potato chips and pancakes and anything else you can put protein into. The consumers seem to really demand it. So we're seeing good demand there. But for some of the higher volume products like cheese and butter, demand domestically in the U.S. has been on the weak side. It looks like most of that is driven from the food service side, where consumers are just not seeing the value for the money and have been cutting back on their restaurant spending. Now, the American football season has started up. I've been watching more TV, seeing more commercials, and the major restaurant chains are pushing value-centered advertisements and pricing to try to get people back into the restaurant. So demand has been weak through most of this year here, but it's possible maybe we could start to pull consumers back in with some of these more value-oriented promotions at food service.
And finally, what does the future hold?
With our current immigration policy, the population is growing less than 1%. With the weakness in food service, per capita consumption is probably growing less than 0.5%. And your demand side looks weaker than 1.5%, and your supply side looks stronger than 3%. And it's not a pretty picture for the next 6 months or so. Now, these lower dairy prices are going to help to slow down the milk production growth. But it's hard to get real bullish on dairy prices until we see a significant slowdown in production. And that slowdown probably doesn't really show up until the second quarter or maybe into the third quarter of next year.
It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
October 1st marks the beginning of the new fiscal year, and we're in a government shutdown. A partial government shutdown, we should say.
Arlen Suderman is with StoneX.
All essential services will continue. That means any federal security forces, police forces, law enforcement actions should continue to go forward. We should also see payments for Social Security, Medicare, veterans benefits continue as well. Some nutrition programs could quickly run out of funding. That's a concern going forward. But overall, most shutdowns do not last very long at all. The longest of which in recent history was in December of 2018, when the government shut down for 35 days. Now, you're seeing a lot of gloom and doom stories in the media about how bad this is going to be for the economy. Don't be fooled by those. That 35-day shutdown in December of 2018, it stretched into January 2019, cost the economy, yes, $3 billion. That is 0.02% of GDP at the time. So that's a very small impact on the economy. Now, the broader markets, therefore, really don't care about these government shutdowns as until they get long enough or significant enough that you have federal workers not spending money that starts to become a drag on the economy. And so we saw early signs of that in the 2018-19 shutdown, but nothing significant. So don't expect a big pull down in the markets just because of this. It's a little different story, though, from the standpoint that the markets are drifting a little bit in a fog. That's because many of the government reports that the markets depend on for data aren't released during the shutdown. Many of the workers have been sent home, have been furloughed if they're considered non-essential. Well, that varies by department of what's considered non-essential. USDA, for example, their recently released plan for a potential shutdown included 42,000 USDA workers who would be furloughed and sent home. That's a lot of workers. Included in that would be NAS surveyors who would be going out into the fields today and surveying fields, sampling fields, weighing samples of corn ears and soybean pods, et cetera, and determining yield for the October WASDE crop report. That's not happening today. Now, if in fact the shutdown only lasts a day or two, then we anticipate that everything will go on schedule as far as the WASDE report. But if it lasts several, 3, 4, 5 days, then we could see the report delayed, or if it goes longer than that, actually canceled. And that's what happened in October of 2013 when the October report was actually canceled. That's a critical time for the markets because we're counting on that data from USDA to really determine the size of the crops.
Speaking of crop size, StoneX trimming its forecast for 2025 corn yields while lifting its expectations for soybeans, reflecting shifting assessments of crop potential and planted acreage. StoneX now projects average corn yield 185.9 bushels per acre, down one bushel from their September report, but due to a higher acreage base, total corn production estimate now 16.7 billion bushels. For soybeans, yields 53.9, yield 4.3 billion bushels.
Also, USDA needs to implement into its WASDE supply and demand balance sheets the surprises in yesterday's small grain summary report and quarterly stocks reports and put that into their balance sheets. That could have significant market implications. So until then, the market's only able to kind of guess how USDA may do that and lean on private estimates.
It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about supply chains. Each year, Cotton Incorporated's global supply chain marketing team has hundreds of meetings with brands and retailers in all corners of the globe. They're working to find innovative ways to replace synthetic fabrics with natural, sustainable cotton to expand your customer base and drive more demand. You grow the cotton. The Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
At Wiley Implement and Spray Center, we are here to keep your Case IH tractors, planters, sprayers, and other implements in tip-top shape this season. Whether you need in-shop or in-field service, Wiley has the factory-trained technicians to keep your equipment running with genuine Case IH parts. Give us a call today or go to WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
This is Agriculture Today.
In the past 3 years, we've been dealing with all kinds of diseases across the dairy industry, both in the U.S. and EU.
Director of Dairy Marketing Insight for StoneX, Matt Donay.
In the U.S., we've had novel things like bird flu showing up in the dairy cows for the first time ever. Now, luckily, bird flu here in the U.S. hasn't been much of an issue this year. But the new concern is around the New World screwworm. This is a parasitic fly that lays its eggs in open wounds of warm-blooded animals. And now this is a little bit graphic, but the eggs hatch and then the larvae effectively eat their hosts. The screwworm used to be endemic to the southern half of the U.S., so we've dealt with this before, but it was eradicated from North America back in the 1970s. It's now making a comeback. It's come back up through Latin America, and it's been found just 70 miles south of the border between Mexico and the U.S. So there's a decent chance that it makes it into the U.S. From the experts that I've read, they think it's a 50-50 chance that it eventually makes it into the U.S. What impact it will have on milk production if it does get here is really hard to say. It depends on how widespread it becomes and what measures we have to treat it. The other issue could be that the government puts into place restricted movement zones where cows and cattle cannot be moved around the U.S. as easily as they typically are. And that might be an issue for the industry as well. So there's fears, there's legitimate fears. But it's really hard to say what impact it will have if it makes it here.
And what is the impact of trade and tariffs?
A customer asked me a very similar question earlier this week. They said, what have been the noticeable impacts of the trade wars this year? And or what impact have the trade wars had? And frankly, it's really hard to point to any real large impacts. We did have some month-to-month volatility. When China put an additional 100%, more than 100% tariff on U.S. dairy imports, we did see U.S. dairy exports to China collapse for a month. But then when China dropped those additional tariffs, we saw U.S. exports to China surge. We also have a little bit of a strange anomaly with butter trade flow statistics between Europe and the U.S., where we're probably going to see some strange movements in butter import numbers for the U.S. But if you zoom out and look at things at an annual level, it looks like U.S. imports will probably be a little bit lower than they otherwise would have been since the U.S. has had additional tariffs on our imports. And our exports might be slightly lower than they otherwise would have been just given the uncertainty around the trade policy. But there isn't much in terms of massive noticeable impacts at an annual level. And in fact, when you look at some of these commodities, our cheese exports, U.S. cheese exports are going to be record high this year. U.S. casein exports look record high. Our butter exports, they're not quite going to be record high, but we're talking about 100, 200% increases in butter exports thanks to very cheap U.S. cheese and butter prices this year.
He looks at the outlook for dairy.
From a long-term perspective, the U.S. population grows about 1% per year. Per capita dairy consumption grows by about 0.5% per year. So if U.S. milk production is growing at about 1.5%, the rule of thumb is that's a pretty balanced market. Over the last couple of months here, U.S. milk production has been growing over 3%. And with the expansion in the dairy herd that we've seen, we're probably going to continue to grow over 3%, at least through the end of this year.
It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
The live cattle futures, the December contract, had a good attempt at trying to make a new high last week, and it did not. So it's running out of steam up in the 240s level.
Bob Mowers with Manduka Trading in Chicago.
And then on the downside here, quickly had a rotation down to the low 230s. So perhaps what could happen, I don't have a crystal ball or anything, but if we don't break out one way or the other, if some kind of triangle forms here, some kind of pennant for those technical analysts out there, then we might just go range bound for a bit of a time. And I'd hate to say it's going to exactly stay between 230 and 240, but somewhere give or take with a percent or two above and below that until the market has a better idea of how its footing is over the next few months or so. If we look at some of the data points for cattle, things that are showing a little bit of a warning flag would be the cash cattle last week that slipped. Northern sales were down about $5 week on week. Southern trade also stalled. 5 area weighted average fell to about 233 and change from 237 and a half ish or so the prior week. So down about $4.50 there. And then also on the wholesale side, the box beef cutout values declined to about 371 and change versus 382. So a bit of a dip there. So cash isn't really sustaining any kind of new gains at the moment, right? So we'll see how that plays out. Working against the market also is that U.S. beef exports to China, they dropped rather sharply. China has shifted its purchases to Australian beef. And it's one of those situations again where it seems to be that China's doing everything they possibly can to not buy from the U.S. And as long as there are suppliers out there that have enough supply where it doesn't really start driving up the prices domestically to a point where their consumers start to do some pushback, then I imagine they're going to just continue to sell it to China. So we'll see how that plays out over the near term here. In terms of the spec side of the equation, commitment to traders report showed that the funds are cutting some of their net long, so taking a little profit up here at these lofty levels. That seems to be what's on the minds of the spec money at the moment. So we'll see how that all plays out. Beyond that, we've also got the hog market, which is an interesting dynamic. Most of the elements that I am reading at the moment are still bullish for the pork market. So we've got the inventory report that came out recently that was relatively bullish, basically showing the shrinking U.S. hog herd. Slaughter and production numbers, pork production was 536.8 million pounds last week. That was down week over week and year over year. So supply side of the equation getting crunched a bit there. Cold storage number showed as of August 31, there was pork in cold storage of about 394 million pounds. That's down 2.7% from July and down 13.5% year on year. So again, dipping into the storage supplies in order to satiate demand right now. So that is bullish for the market. And then you've also got the opposite of what's happening in the cattle market in terms of the commitment of traders with the funds long and getting longer. They're net long about 166,500 contracts. That was a 6,500-ish higher increase from the previous week. So they're still palms in buying in that market.
It's Agriculture Today.
This land, there's no more perfect place on earth. It provides more than the crop you grow or the herd you tend. It gives you purpose. And to help young, beginning, and small farmers fulfill their purpose, Capital Farm Credit is here for you. Our decades of experience providing advice, products, and opportunities can help you build a life on the land you love most. To learn more, visit CapitalFarmCredit.com. Capital Farm Credit. Together, we're better.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.